After Pentecost and the end of the Easter season, we're in ordinary time, but we have these two solemnities of the Lord during ordinary time. Last week was Trinity Sunday. Today is the solemnity of the body and blood of the Lord, commonly known as Corpus Christi in Latin. And so we have that wonderful gospel story from Matthew about the Last Supper, where the Eucharist is established. But we have other readings, too, that kind of tell the larger picture of this story. That reading from Exodus follows the pattern of ancient covenants or treaties between nations. And there was always a certain inequality in those relationships because the conquering king would make demands. But he would offer some things too. He would say, I will offer you protection from your enemies. I will offer you basic goods and services. And in exchange, I want your sons for my army, and I want your taxes. And so he establishes what those boundaries are going to be, and the other party agrees, and then they live in peace. So here, the conquering king is God. And there's an inequality there, obviously, because the Israelites are not God. But God has rescued them from slavery in Egypt. He has conquered Egypt on their behalf. And he says, now I'm going to be your God, and you will be my people. And so I'm going to offer you protection from your enemies. I'm going to take care of you. I will be your God in every way. But I want from you the Ten Commandments. That's basically what we're talking about here. And so, in other words, I want you to act toward me and toward one another in the same way that I do. So the first three commandments are about love of God, and the final seven are about love of neighbor. And so they enter into a relationship. It's not an equal relationship by any means, but it's a good, healthy relationship. And it lasts them through many generations. Jesus offers a new covenant that is an improvement on the covenant at Sinai. How is it an improvement? That second reading from the letter to the Hebrews establishes an elaborate argument about how this covenant is better. And there are two things we want to point out here. The first one is the author says he enters into the sanctuary not made by hands but to last forever. In other words, he enters into the kingdom, into heaven. He enters into divinity. And he doesn't do that by offering the blood of goats or rams, but his own blood. And in the same way that the covenant at Sinai was sealed by two things, one, the sprinkling of blood, and so Moses takes half the blood and sprinkles it on the altar, and then he puts the other half in bowls and sprinkles the people with it. And that was one of the typical ways that they sealed covenant treaty relationships. A more graphic way of seeing that is another text from the book of Exodus, where Moses has a dream, and in the dream, he's standing before a line hung with parts of animals. And they're dripping with blood as they've been cut up and hung on this line. And each member of the treaty passes through those animals and gets blood all over themselves, which is a way of saying, may this happen to me if I don't keep my part of the bargain. If I should break this covenant, may I be cut up and hung on a line. It's a little bit, well, much more graphic, but it's the same thing really as little children saying, cross my heart and hope to die. You know, in other words, this is a deadly serious pact. So, what does Jesus do? He doesn't offer the blood of animals. He offers his own blood. And so you've seen those images of Christ hanging on the cross with the blood and water flowing from his side. He's sprinkling the church, us, with his blood. Not the blood of goats, but his own. And he's sealing the covenant. He's sealing the pact between himself and us. Okay? But the second thing that's interesting about this that makes it superior to the first covenant is that not only does he enter into the sanctuary himself, but he invites us in as well. So you remember those gospel passages where at the crucifixion, there's a violent earthquake and the curtain of the sanctuary is torn from top to bottom. Okay, there was this curtain that hung as an entry to the Holy of Holies where only the priest could enter. And it was veiled so that no one could even see in there, much less go in. Only the priest could go in there. But Jesus rips that veil, that curtain, from top to bottom so that not only he goes in, but we all go in with him. We're invited into the sanctuary not made by human hands. We're invited into the sanctuary that lasts forever. In other words, we are invited into divinity. So this unequal relationship, which is naturally unequal because Jesus is God and we're not, but by taking on our humanity, by lowering himself to our level, you might say, he raises us to divine level. So there's a wonderful exchange of natures here. He gives us his divine nature by taking our human nature. And so even though we're never going to be God, we have invited up into the heavenly sanctuary. We have invited up to sharing life in the Trinity and sharing the very glory of the Son. And not just for a while, but for all eternity. And that's what's being celebrated here every Sunday. It's good for us to reflect on it a little bit more deeply on this Sunday of the solemnity of the body and blood of the Lord. But that's always what's happening here. The veil is forever torn. And so we're not just remembering what Christ did on the altar, we're joining ourselves to it. And a lot of this is about memory. He gave us this memorial of his death. And there's a key phrase in the Eucharistic prayer that we all sing together, and that's one of the most important phrases in the entire Mass. Sing it with me. We proclaim your death, O Lord, and profess your resurrection until you come again. It's the memorial. It's remembering his death. And St. Paul says, whenever we do this in memory of him, we are remembering his death until he comes again. The Greek word for this moment is anamnesis. And omnesis in Greek is to forget. But if you put an in front of a Greek word, it makes it its opposite, just like putting un in front of an English word. So anamnesis is to remember. It keeps us from amnesia. Amnesia comes from that Greek word to forget. And when you have amnesia, you forget who you are. It's your identity, it's your very self that you've lost. And here we are remembering the foundation of our faith. We're remembering who we are in the context of his death and resurrection. If we don't do this regularly, and this is why, one of several reasons why the church requires that we be here every Sunday and do this. Because if you don't, you get spiritual amnesia. You lose your identity in the body of Christ. And so to sing that memory is important. And to be part of this keeps us spiritually alive. And then one final thing. In all of these Old Testament sacrifices, they always ended with a meal. And so if you read from that passage from Exodus, a few lines farther, it talks about the meal that they shared then after this. Jesus establishes the Eucharist as a meal. So this wonderful piece of furniture here, it has a dual purpose and a dual symbolic meaning. It's an altar of sacrifice. and it remembers the sacrifice of Christ on the cross. But it's also a fellowship table where we eat of the heavenly banquet. It's sacrifice and meal at the same time. And so the final element we want to remember on this solemnity of the body and blood of the Lord is that remembering his sacrifice, we are invited to share his meal. And what is his meal? It's not a lamb, it's him. It's the body and blood of the Lord. No one has ever been invited to a meal more powerful, more significant, more redeeming than this one.